Comments made on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 87 for January 29, 2011. Our topic today is ATIA 2011 highlights. And our guest today to talk about all of this is we have Dean Martineau. He's the creator of the Top Tech Tidbits, a weekly overview of the latest good stuff in access technology. Also joining us, Larry Lewis. Many of you know his website, Flying Blind. Larry's going to talk about three changes and new directions he kind of sees in the whole access technology marketplace or the industry. So I'm going to start with you, Larry. Since we're getting a late start, I know you have an engagement to attend shortly. So what were kind of the three big issues I know that you want to address today?
Well, thanks for having me. And yeah, I was actually at the beginning of ATIA. I had to leave partway through it for some other business. And I guess probably the big issue that I've seen as it relates to this industry is sort of the shift from technology, buying technology and so forth, and this purchasing technology to much more of a service-based approach to providing adaptive technology. One of my clients is California State University Northridge, and many of you know them for the CSUN conference and such. And they do a lot of adaptive technology certification trainings around the country. And I help out with the blind, low vision, and some of the speech recognition components of that certification process. And so we had a session prior to ATIA starting and was able to work with a number of professionals in the industry, getting up to speed with all the different types of technology that's out there. And really what I'm finding in this industry is that individuals who are providing services to individuals who are vision impaired or blind are primarily interested in them getting tasks completed. They're not really so much interested in the spec of a product as much as they are how can we get a specific task completed, be it in the classroom or the workplace. And so there's a few different types of products that my company is currently involved with. In fact, we also do a bit of podcasting, which I'll be letting Mike and Mike and all of you folks know about as they come out. But we actually have a product that we're working on with a Canadian-based organization that will be distributing the product within North America. Many of you have heard of Aroga Technologies up in Vancouver, British Columbia, up in Canada. And we're working in conjunction with a Polish company named Harpo that's been around for about 30 years, a lot longer than Oprah's Harpo. And Harpo Technologies has been responsible for bringing lots of different sorts of solutions in Eastern Europe. Because of a lot of the economic concerns in the U.S. and a lot of things that have been going on over the past few years, we're fairly excited to be rolling out a 12-cell Braille display, Braille input device called BrailleTen for less than $1,000. It's a Braille input-output device that works very well with all of your Macintosh products from the Mac computers to the iPad to the iPhones and so forth. Other mobile technologies out there, mobile speak, talks equipped products, and also works very well with system access products using a PC. Many would say, well, is 12 cells enough? Well, a lot of times it's not enough Braille for certain tasks. But as far as the private sector goes in refreshable Braille and the like, we're pretty happy to have a product that's less than $1,000 that will get you some Braille access. And more times than not, especially when using the mobile device, even with a touch screen and so forth, it's nice to be able to use a lot of note taker familiar commands to access the touch screen, which is accessible for sure. But as far as writing and entering information, we feel that having Braille input output for less than $1,000 coupled with an off the shelf device that has a built in screen reader, you could be walking away with a full blown solution for less than $1,500, which is pretty unheard of in this industry. So I'm pretty happy about that. We also have just a Braille input device called the BrailleTen Slim for less than $300 that again, if you're wanting just an input device, a Braille input device without the Braille cells, we can drop the price really about $700 and give you an input device. It's real important for products like the iPad, I think.
Wow, so that you can actually do the six key Braille input and have the backward translation of that. So great for people who maybe know their Braille but are still coming up to speed on typing, or like you said, for quick entry on the iPad. And
yeah, and for a quick review, I mean, we see a deaf-blind market that hasn't really been touched with a lot of these touchscreen devices. And once you have this device paired, as you know, with your iPad and your iPhone, they find each other quite seamlessly when both devices are turned on. So we see some deaf-blind ramifications for some of the applications that are out there as well.
So you said there were three things. Did you cover all three? There, I got two. I'm sorry.
I'll hustle along and cover the other two. A second podcast that Flying Blind will be rolling out later, once the weather gets a little bit better in my neck of the woods up north here, is working with Code Factory, who many of you know, who recently provided access to AviMaps, which is an application on Nokia phones, a mainstream application on Nokia phones. And it is a free application that you'll find on a lot of your Nokia phones that are out today, such as the X6 and so forth, some of the touchscreen devices. AviMaps allows you to identify where you're at, look around, determine what's around you, and actually either through walking or driving allows you to determine where you're going. You can also do a lot of the GPS activities, such as setting routes, saving routes, editing routes, and driving a car or a walk with this phone. There's no need for any sort of special GPS program out there. It's built into the MobileSpeak 4.6 screen reader and is sort of an answer to Wayfinder going by the wayside, if you will. A lot of the folks who are Symbian phone users were really left out in the cold when Wayfinder pulled up stakes and pretty much stopped development on everything. So AviMaps is built into a lot of these phones, and with MobileSpeak running, you have built-in access. So again, access to free GPS, thus circumventing a lot of the concerns that are out there for persons who might want to use GPS solutions but don't want to pay the cost of having a GPS solution on their note taker or what have you. The third and final thing that I've been working on for quite some time, and we've been trying to figure out a way to break into the market with this product, is once you have determined where you've gone, or at least where you want to be with a GPS solution, actually through orientation and mobility, getting to the actual location through an open area like a parking lot and so forth. And I'm partnering with one of my old Braille Note development buddies down in New Zealand, and we've rolled out a product called SoundPost, which from a glance might look like a talking sign type product, but it's really not. It's based off of infrared technology and allows for directional navigation across wide spaces by use of a hand controller and a base station that might be mounted on a doorway or what have you. Allows you to navigate large, wide open areas and orient yourself for the last 100 feet of the journey. So that's a very, I would call it kind of a low-tech, simple product that we're trying to break into a number of different universities and so forth. Very inexpensive. The components cost less than $200 per component for hand controller and for base stations that have an infrared camera, which allows for great learning experience for orientation and mobility instructors trying to teach directional travel to their O&M students. It also allows for individuals like myself who have pretty good O&M skills getting across wide open spaces to finish off the final component of the GPS journey. So our big thing at Flying Blind is lower cost, a service approach to what we do. It's not always about selling the big expensive note takers and Braille displays. People want to get their jobs done. They want to get their work done in the classroom without being broke in the process. That's sort of our mantra.
Awesome. And I know you got to leave shortly, so I just want to mention also joining us, Dean Martineau with the weekly Top Tech Tidbits. Also, Joe Steinkamp, who is the only person who has listened to the 25 interviews that I recorded at ATIA.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and I don't know, we're going to have Brad Hodges. I don't know if he's with us yet, or we'll be joining us shortly, maybe after Larry goes. But before you go, Larry, I do have to ask you about one thing, and that is the news that was announced there with the Open Braille Initiative. Okay, and I have a wrong URL going on there, but
The Open Braille Initiative has been on the table for quite some time, and it really came into being. Two things really brought it into being. The first of which was really Freedom Scientific's, I guess, the felt need or perceived need to really have signed drivers for their products. And, you know, from a, I don't want to get myself in trouble, from a product management and a development standpoint, I sort of understand their need to have some sort of signed process in place because they have to support all these different Braille displays. Having said that, it does present a lot of problems for different types of manufacturers of refreshable Braille displays and a lot of hoops to jump through and so forth. The second, I guess, reason why this is coming into being is because technology is changing. And as you all know, the ALVA products, which have evolved over the years, really began to take more of a human interface device approach, where they're really seen by the computer as a human interface device for interacting with a computer. So you don't really have any sort of proprietary process for connecting those products. I know HandyTech has also followed suit with that, and I know Baum and some of the other companies are working on that as well, I believe. And so what this Open Braille initiative does is it sort of unites the manufacturers who, you know, for sure are competitors. They have competitive products, but it sort of unites the process of developing a standard for this human interface device situation and for just bringing some standardization to a process that I think is going to be around no matter what sort of built-in screen readers we have. Braille is so specialized and such a niche thing and such a thing that requires such support and hand-holding that we're always going to have some sort of third-party interaction as it relates to refreshable Braille. I don't see Microsoft or Apple picking up a Braille display line. Stranger things have happened. So I think it's real important. I think it's great that a lot of these folks are getting on the same page, putting their competitive differences aside and standardizing some of the processes of getting drivers built in.
Let me ask you, is it really that, or are they really hedging their bets? I mean, there are some in the industry that feel that because Apple has put a screen reader and magnification in, that Microsoft will be compelled to do the same thing. And if that happens, what that might do for screen reader manufacturers. So maybe they are assuring that their devices will work in all future versions of Windows. So maybe this is really... You know, this.
I think it is hedging bets, and I mean, I've heard rumblings about screen readers and Windows 8 and blah blah blah. And I think, and I'm not. I mean, Dean and I were joking around before we went live because I'm getting closer and closer myself to, yeah, this whole Mac bandwagon thing. I think they're in trouble now. I mean, these Mac products work incredibly well, and you throw Braille or a foldable QWERTY keyboard in the mix, and I mean, they're making a serious impact in a short amount of time. So I don't have any inside knowledge as to how the companies are doing or what have you, but I'm just saying that if Microsoft follows suit, it's a bad day for a screen reader manufacturer, a third-party screen reader manufacturer, I think.
Well, and if that happens, and we're certainly not saying it is going to happen, but if it does, we will have to advocate like never before to make sure that whatever they put, even they call it an introductory or base level screen reader, that, you know, people who need more can get more, or that this thing have some very high functioning. We should hold them to Apple's accountability, their standards.
And the dark horse in this whole thing is, I mean, sure, it's on mobile devices, but Google with Android. I mean, you know, we haven't even mentioned them. I mean, you throw them into the mix and they start expanding and doing some things through some of their, you know, cloud computing stuff. And I see the scope of how technology is delivered changing, but I see Braille always being Braille. And I always see there, you know, being some sort of third party handholding, or because it is a smaller market. And so,
or Windows Mobile 7. Okay. Yeah. We'll get you accessibility, but we're not going to roll it out initially. We're going to retrofit it later. And you know what happens.
Absolutely.
In that case. So, but I know you're busy, so you're welcome to stay if you like. If you need to go, I can respect that, and I appreciate your input, and we appreciate your efforts on getting the cost down. It's 12-cell display, certainly half the cost of other technologies that I saw.
And for any questions on any of this, because I'm going to be dropping off soon, feel free to email me at larry.lewis, larry.lewis, at flying, F as in Frank, lying-blind.com. And yeah, I appreciate being brought into the mix with folks like Dean and Brad and so forth. It's an honor to be sharing the microphone and the program with them. And thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Larry. Well, one thing outside of ATIA, but I do want to talk about it. I'm not sure how many opinions anyone has in here because it happened this morning. This is the NFB Blind Driver Challenge. And just this morning at 11:30 Eastern, it was demoed in Daytona. And so I'll be curious. We'll actually get some audio and video coverage. And we're going to talk about this more this Thursday, February 3, on our This Month in AT. And I hope we can get JJ and or Matt, who actually attended the event in Daytona, and get their feel about the enthusiasm of this. And a lot of people think, well, big deal. I don't care about driving a car. And to me, it's a bigger issue of, A, the ability to set a goal and just accomplish it to whatever level it is. But B, we can get something like this because the objective is to benefit mainstream society, to get a vehicle that's smart enough to take over if someone falls asleep at the wheel or is distracted on a cell phone or texting things they shouldn't be doing, or anything can happen, a kid, whatever. But also how this carries over into appliances, be they washing machines or whatever, to actually detect the type of clothes. And you know, so it's interesting to see where this is going to go. And, of course, the NFB is doing their work, Google is doing their project, and there's innovations going on in Europe to actually create vehicles that follow each other. So I think it is an exciting time. I don't know. Hopefully I didn't lose everyone there.
Didn't lose me.
Okay, good. That was just Larry dropping off. Okay.
I think that was Larry.
No, it's me. It's me. I was dropping him out.
Okay, good. Okay. Are we able to get Brad Hodges?
I'm doing that.
Okay, great. Working on that now. Very good. So, Dean, do you have any thoughts about – okay, do you have any thoughts about the driver challenge?
Well, probably similar to yours. And I think – first off, I want to thank you for bringing me into this. This is your podcast and tech chats – are something I almost always listen to keep up with what's going on in technology, you know, at a deeper level than what I cover. And I'm the only person here who was actually I'm not the only person here who didn't attend ATIA, I don't think, but I'm the only one who hasn't ever attended any of these things. So I think I'm a little unique. They don't put them up here in the Northwest, and I haven't quite found the prioritization to attend. So driver challenge is cool, and again, for the reasons you talk about, and for the very fact that they are thinking outside the box and challenging assumptions. And I don't know, you know, I haven't studied it enough to know whether it's going to be possible. They have a better idea, and I think more power to them.
Well, we're honored.
It might not work.
Yeah, it may not. We'll have to see where it goes. We're honored to have you, and we're all about promoting. We hope that this is the third one that I've done, and hopefully my traveling to Orlando and San Diego and at least the ACB convention in the summer is helpful to you and others who can't attend the events for cost reasons. So at least you get some idea. And one thing that JJ and I talked about the other night, and I'm excited about this, I'm glad that we talked about actually kind of partnering in a sense so that each of us can cover different aspects, because no one person can walk into this ATIA or CSUN and capture everything that's going on. So we're very excited about that. You know, even in the case of CSUN, I'm thinking, well, I'm really not the expert in blindness and low vision, so maybe Joe, hint, hint, can, you know, do those interviews because he has the knowledge and he knows what questions to ask and he can tell the hype from, you know, real-world advancements and lowering of costs when that happens. So we're excited about that we're going to actually start working as a team to cover these things, and those that are interested in braille displays and high volume braille printers or low vision products, and maybe even the education and the AAC aspects of it, the augmentative alternative communications. Nope. So that we cover those.
I'm kind of excited about a couple things, you know, and blindness being what it is. I mean, I remember having a conversation several years ago with several people, and we all talked about, okay, what's the thing that bothers you most about being blind? And whoops, I don't know who we still don't have.
You there. It's still me.
Oh, still you. Okay, good. You're just doing all kinds of damage.
Yeah, he's just trying to bring in Brad for us. So
I know. My thing is reading. You know, being able to read what I want to read when I want to read it. And of course, we've come so much closer to that reality than we ever used to be. I think that the accessible PC Kindle app. Apparently, it isn't exactly 100% perfect, but it's amazing. I mean, you can now buy books and read them.
Yeah, that's very exciting. We're going to talk about that more.
Massive library.
We're going to talk about that more on Feb 3, but you are right. That is a very exciting time. And one thing that we debated a little bit in the banter that we did for the upcoming podcast on Monday with JJ, Matt, and Mike Calvo as we were going from his home back to the hotel, we talked about is Daisy, you know, should we be fighting for Daisy or should we be fighting for EPUB and making all the books accessible and trying to come up with one standard so we're not in a situation of asking publishers to support multiple standards. So there was a lot of...
Well, the thing I still don't like about the Kindle thing, I like reading on my portable device, whatever it happens to be, or, you know, or on a portable Braille display and away from the computer, and that's not going to happen with the accessible Kindle app. So there's still that aspect of choice that I want to maintain, which is in part I'm spoiled. I mean, good grief, here I have this, you know, I can read, but that's not good enough. I want to read where I want to read when I want to read.
Well, what about you have an iPhone, right? I know you've done you did a really good walkthrough on some important things to know about using it.
Matter of fact, that's another important event in technology for the week. The book that Anna Dresner and I co-authored, Introducing the iPhone for Blind Users, is out from National Braille Press this week. So, yes.
But the announcement here from AI Squared that they are coming out with a product called Zoom Reader, initially starting just for the iPhone 4, and so you could try it on the touch if you like, but really you're going to need the iPhone 4. Its limitations with the cameras of the phones, you know, Apple cuts corners. You know, they say they're HD, but unfortunately, you know, much less is required to make a camera HD than what we need for OCR. So, but for $19.99, you know, Doug Hacker talks about this, and we're very excited. It uses the Abbey engine, and it's built right in to the software that will be on the phone. So you will be able to not only scan documents, but I asked him about LCD, and he said he was actually able to read a like a fax machine or a copier, actually. So, and I put the bug in his brain about, well, let's try computer screens and, you know, let's try some others. So that to me is probably the most exciting thing about camera-based OCR. But you talked about reading, and so I have a big concern. There's so many companies getting into the space, and we're curious why that is. The price points are all over the map. Optilec had a great product. I mean, a great-looking product. I mean, it actually looked like a boombox. You know, $2,500, though, to me still puts it a little bit out of the league. But the form factor, the design of it, and you actually flip up the camera from the front and lay your document underneath or... I think
yeah, but who's gonna buy
iPhone
it?
Screen? Well, exactly. I'm like, let's get a zero dropped off that. No, I'm just saying the price has got to come down.
Let me interrupt here for 1 second,
yes,
Michael.
Sir.
I might have to reestablish this call in order to get Brad because I see him, but I can't get him unless I kill this call.
Okay, well, you're welcome to try then. I will comment on some other things coming up in future tech chats if you want to do that.
Hang in there, Dean.
Just hang in there, Dean. Joe will bring us back. He's been engineering really good on putting together the show notes, and we apologize, folks. It's just a lot of things happening in a short period of time, and the 25 interviews that even I've done, I haven't gone back and listened to all of them yet. I've heard a lot of them on the plane, but we have about 3 hours of audio from the event. There's also a lot of good stuff from Blind Bargains you can listen to. There were some announcements on Bookshare, and of course they're bringing out some stuff. They weren't really ready to discuss it yet, but Jim Fruchterman is scheduled at least to join us on February 10, and he will talk about some initiatives they're doing, a project he has called Raising the Floor, but also we'll find out Benetech Bookshare and kind of find out what they're bringing on. We're also going to do shows coming up on advocacy. There are some things that we need to be addressing. We found some other organizations that we were not initially aware of to assist with that and bring things to where they need to be. So all those are future tech chats down the road, and we always welcome your suggestions and resources at serotalk.com. Joe, do we have Brad now with us?
We have Brad on the line with us.
All right. And Dean, did you make it back, buddy?
Good afternoon,
Mike. Brad, good to speak with you, sir. Skype woes as they are. Though you did actually attend, right? So you and I were the two that attended. Joe and Dean are getting their information just from what was put out in press releases. And, of course, Joe has had the benefit of listening to my 25 interviews that I conducted.
Afraid not, Mike. I was not able to attend. My colleague Lee Huffman has been attending, as have a number of AFB staff. So I have information via trusted third parties.
Okay.
And Dean should be now back on the line as well.
Okay, very good.
I am here.
Very good.
Hey! Hey!
It's fun. It's live. It's all the way good. So I guess I want to ask you, Brad. It's interesting now because I'm the only one that was there, physically there, but, you know, we all got spoke with people who were there. But what were your big takeaways? To me, it was Open Braille, which we talked about earlier, the Open Braille Initiative, that now they actually have a 100K piece of software that can even run on a USB stick, so that now we can open up a lot of Braille displays to screen readers without the need for the sign drivers, opening up a lot of other access options.
I think Braille's the big takeaway, Mike. I was thrilled that the two major Braille hardware embosser manufacturers, Index and Enabling Technologies, each brought out new devices and, from the sound of things, new technologies. A 25 dots per inch graphics reproduction technology for Enabling, and according to the information from Index, new technology there, the Braille box at 800 pages a minute. And we have a new version of Duxbury that's doing things. So I think Braille's a big deal, and I find that very exciting, among other things.
Well, the one of the big keys with the Braille box is the cost factor, $12,995. So everything else I saw was like $45,000. So for the production houses, the Horizons for the Blind, and you know, I guess the National Braille Press, different folks that use these high speed Braille embossers, hopefully this will pass along in savings, or the ability to offer more materials, or to, you know, be able to offer more documents with less number of actual people who need them. We talked the other day about finding some innovative ways to make more restaurant menus available. So we're always glad to see the price. I agree with you that this Index, the Braille box, is certainly going to be a great enhancement in that space. You cannot physically get it yet. What I saw the other day was a prototype. It was built in a very sturdy, well-made soundproofing case. So, you know, it was not loud. It wasn't, not like the kind you had to fire it up and walk out of the room. So we're very excited about that, and we'll be glad, I think, when CSUN, maybe they'll really have something ready to get out to the masses. So,
and I don't know what your impression was, Mike. I also took away that there is innovation. There are new entrants, new players, new form factors in the OCR, optical character recognition arena. We have the product from AI Squared. Obviously, we have your guys' products with what I understand, both the software and a hardware component. We have the ability of Kurzweil to support a camera from another manufacturer. So there again, some changes, some new strategies, and some new players in the OCR market. And like the Braille market, they had really kind of been, I think, sleepers for the last certainly 3 or 4 years, if not more.
Well, it's just interesting. There's so many companies getting into it, but the price point, I think, is going to put it out of the hands of many. And if most states are cutting back on their rehab dollar spending, I mean, it is just obvious that some of these folks are not going to survive. You could argue the good thing is the price will come down. A great example is the Intel Reader that sold for $14.99. I know now through the end of March you can get it for $8.99, or two or more units, $7.99 a piece. So I guess that'll be maybe the best thing, although maybe it's a downside because then they'll be just clearing their warehouses of products that were built and never sold. But that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. So many folks getting into that space.
I think there's some interesting stuff happening. One of the things that I find interesting is the use of the camera on the Apple devices, the iPod, iPad, or iPod and iPhone devices. One thing I would like to see is some type of a physical mechanism that we could place our iPod or iPhone in and know for certain what the target area was that we were taking the picture of. Having worked on the first generation of the KNFB handheld reader, I spent a lot of time contemplating the fact that, you know, sighted folks have had photography, mature photography, for well over 100 years. Yet as blind people, we're just now walking into it, a century behind the sighted folks, and there's still a lot we have to figure out. And we can also contemplate the time when we might use real-time technology based on photo images, based on a camera. And again, knowing or having strategies and techniques to be able to aim that camera and point it in a given direction and have an understanding of what would be in the view, I think that's an interesting business that's going to require some more development, some more thought, some more innovation.
Well, one thing we saw that we were excited about with this Zoom Reader, not only the price point, $20 for your iPhone 4, but also that he's built in a voice recognition so you can actually say, take picture, because what happens is you move your hand. So now if we can negate that, eliminate the need for that, that causes the jitter or the blurriness, your hand ends up blocking part of the document you're trying to scan. Some real simple innovation there that I'm very excited to play with it once it comes out here. And the price point, that's the big thing, is the price point.
I'll be snatching that as soon as it comes up. And there are various programs that purport to let you scan and read even with the iPhone 4. And I don't know of much of anybody who's gotten anything out of any of them. So if this Zoom Reader works, that'll be good. I'm also excited, not as revolutionary, but again, it's going to be nice for those of us that have iPhones, that when the Bookshares app gets out, to be able to read those books, access that collection with the iPhone is going to be fun. Not earth-shaking, but fun.
Well,
and I was also pleased.
Go ahead, Brad.
I was also pleased, a little disappointed, but also pleased to see Keysoft 9.1. You wish more could happen. You wish that more resources could be developed taking this expensive device and really bringing it up to total modernity. But at least it's not just stagnant. They are improving it.
Dean, let me ask you a question. This is certainly not meant to in any way belittle or give short shrift to note takers as productivity tools for blind and visually impaired people. They're a vital and important part of the technology kind of spectrum for us, which is why I'm really, really concerned. And I think there's a real problem pinning our technology on an old version of a rather out-of-date, out-of-touch operating system, namely the Windows Mobile environment. And there, at least right now, don't seem to be any real plausible alternatives on the horizon.
No, it's really sad. And again, the money isn't there. The money is in, magnification and, low vision work. Maybe somebody will decide to come out with something. I mean, there's this whole thing on the iPhone list of let's use our iPhones iPads as note takers. That's fine as long as all you're doing is writing notes. But as soon as you want to search for content, access multiple files, and display Braille files, you can't do any of those things.
Right. And you want to do it for 8 hours at a stretch, too. And you can't.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm hoping somebody will fill this gap, but I don't know. Nobody knows of anybody doing it. The only one that's possibly doing it is, and I can't remember the name of it, but you guys do, the initiative that Dean Blasey is undertaking. And, if somebody knows about how to put a product out and is pretty well cognizant of the needs of blind Braille users, Dean Blasey is, so I'm hoping that something happens with that, but of course that's not going to be easy to do.
The Braille Wizard, is that what you were thinking
right
of? Right, yeah. The Braille Wizard running Android, that I think is what you were shooting for there.
Yes.
And my, just to chime in here, DOCX files, that's the big one. If you're running in PPT, PowerPoint, XLS, that can be a big issue. And how do you, get those documents off without using, say, Dropbox? With a note taker, you can just kind of mount it and go. So some good points made by both you guys.
Yeah, that was Brad beat me to there, because that was what I was going to ask you, Dean. What would it take to make an iOS device a viable? I really want to see us be able to use a mainstream device and get the cost factor down. I'm sorry, $4,000 to $7,000 is just too much, and we've got to break
that.
But
even at that, besides the Apple Braille implementation, I'm an extremely competent Braille user. I can jump through hoops and use that thing. but I don't think every Braille user is going to be able to write Braille on the iDevices at the present, the way they back translate and the way you have to, the hoops you have to jump through to make corrections. There are some people that are going to find that pretty frustrating.
Mike, I want to depart from your thinking there for a minute. I not necessarily disagree with it, but perhaps provide a different perspective. I think charging $4,000 to $6,000 for something that will be durable, that will last, that will truly enable an individual to be successful in an occupation or a profession is a good thing. If you are employed as a professional, a teacher, a doctor, a broadcaster, etc., spending this $4,000 to $6,000 to $7,000, I think fits into the global scheme. My concern is that even given those circumstances, and I realize those are tougher and tougher, even then I have concerns that the road ahead doesn't really justify spending that amount of money. So it's not so much the amount in the context of employment that bothers me, it's the value proposition, or perhaps the diminishing value proposition posed by the operating system dilemma.
I guess part of it, you know, the money's a concern, just getting it, but my two bigger concerns, Brad, are intentionally using older hardware and older software. And I guess
I agree. Yeah, I think that's my thing, Mike. You're right. And you know, I don't much care what age it is. You know, my Braille writer is probably 45 years old and it works just fine. But you're absolutely right, and I think that's more than the hardware, that's related to the operating system. And I don't know where this is going to go. I hope Dean is successful and the effort is successful. Given the little bit of Android development I've recently had exposure to at AFB, I have tremendous doubts and reservations regarding it as a viable, stable operating system for a very circumscribed, closed type of device, which a note taker is.
Yeah, the problem is somebody is going to have to just be willing to spend the money, innovate, and listen to the consumers. I actually, this is probably not going to be a popular sentiment here, I think Freedom Scientific is the most likely of any of the players right now to do it. I have no reason to believe they're going to. But, you know, I don't see anybody else even as a candidate, and they may not be a candidate either. But somebody's going to have to pay attention to what's really going on in the modern world, not use, you know, like you say, ancient operating systems that you'd be laughed out of the store if you tried to sell these to anybody right now. And then pay attention to the consumers a little bit, listen to some intelligent input, and build something. And I don't know. I hope it happens.
We have a comment from Twitter that's asking from the TechX Swiss Weekly guys if that the decline in Braille literacy is, you know, also affecting the bottom line, that not as many Braille displays get sold. What do you guys think about that concept?
I don't know. Is there a decline in Braille literacy, or is there an increase in the low vision market? I mean, the low vision market is just going to grow. That's where the money is. That's where, I mean, and Braille literacy has been a challenge for a long time. I don't know that it's, and there's a lot of reasons why that's a challenge.
I haven't seen data lately. My other hunch, and that's an interesting perspective, Dean. I think you're onto something there. The other thing I would point out is that the pipeline for those devices is I think plumb full. For the most part, the folks who need them and who are likely to acquire them have done so. And so I think it's a small market to start with, and perhaps now you're dealing with more of a replacement issue than an initial purchase issue.
I want to talk about the screen reader.
I would even go so far as to say that the Mac is giving them an opportunity to remarket and sell more.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the Mac makes a fascinating. I think the MacBook Air, the Air, for example, makes a fascinating target and proposition for a note taker like
exactly
scenario and overlay where we might contemplate a software suite that would sit on top of or within the Mac OS and provide a very consistent, shall we say, a walled garden using some type of a companion device.
Or I'm still wanting to see a Braille dock. I don't know how big that would be, but, you know, imagine you could take your Mac or iPad or just be able to insert it into a dock and have the Braille display integrated into that. I do want to talk about screen readers because there were two announcements there I thought of interest. One, of course, was that GW Micro gave me a brief demo of Window Eye 7.5, and aside from simplifying the menu structure for all the different settings they have, the big announcement for them was 7.5, as long as all are using the same version, you can have remote access capabilities. So I'm glad to see that, you know, JAWS is not the only player in that space. And, of course, with System Access, we have the capability, regardless of which screen reader is running. But I'm glad to see GW come into that space. And the other thing was that Chris Gray will be selling in the U.S. on behalf of Balm the Cobra screen reader. Now, this is one I don't know if anyone has played with. I'm certainly going to give it a play this weekend. But they're up to 9.0, and I think 9.1 is coming out very shortly. So certainly it's been around for a while. And one feature that stood out to me that got my attention was it has a scan the screen function. So if you have a screen where it really doesn't, the screen reader doesn't read what's up there, you can actually scan it and then kind of navigate it. Basically, converts it, actually scans it like OCR, and then lets you click on the buttons and so forth. So there's a lot of hostile apps I know all of us have worked with, or part of it reads or part of it don't, or certain types of apps like backup drive, you know, backup imaging software and things like that. And they said also work with PDF documents to the extent that it'll capture what page is currently viewable on the screen. So I couldn't get an exact price out of them. Chris said it would definitely be less than $800, and Balm said, you know, $800. So obviously they're going to go with the status quo and, you know, not try to come down to the, you know, $400 or $500 point that we use at Serotech and like to see others follow. But do you have any thoughts on screen reader innovations or things you'd like to see in that space? Are you excited? Do you care one way or the other?
I think the notion of a real-time OCR-based screen reader is a fascinating thing. And I think those of us who've been involved in the OCR field for these many, many years contemplate a day when instead of a software screen reader, you might connect an HDMI output or a VGA output to a device that would render the screen, regardless of one's operating system or if it was Flash or whatnot. So I think it's a very, very interesting technology.
Any thoughts, Dean?
I think that's fascinating. I don't know how much of a market there's going to be for it, just because, I mean, somebody has to market it. It's going to have to do things in programs that the existing screen readers don't do. We all kind of know the reasons why we have what we have now. I mean, people get JAWS, they use it in their workplace, so they go ahead and buy it at home. Or they get System Access because they can afford it, or they get Window, they like WindowEyes, and then maybe they use it in the workplace, or then again, they use NVDA. And of course, there's the little fact that those guys are now proving that free screen readers really aren't free after all. It takes money to write a screen reader, and they aren't going to have any more if they don't get it by July. So it's an uphill battle, I think, for these guys to make it. But if they can prove that they access something important that other screen readers don't, and then if they can get that message out to people, there's been talk about that screen reader on some of the lists before. It didn't have a U.S. dealer, the talk hasn't gone very far on those lists. Some people tried it. I didn't hear a whole lot more about it. Chris and company can show us why we need it. As far as the price goes, I'm not overly surprised by the price. It's made in Europe. Things are not cheap in Europe. And again, it's making screen readers is not an easy thing.
Well, that is true. And I mean, I like to see options. I'm certainly excited about, we'll see how it really works at the end of the day, this concept of actually taking an image of an application that you currently have up on the screen and then being able to navigate it and actually click on things. And I'm just going to be curious to see if it really does open up access to any applications that we currently don't have. Because, as you know, I mean, each screen reader excels in certain apps, and there are generally, if something, you know, either works with them all or it doesn't. There's apps that just isn't going to work with any of them. That's the way it is. So we'll see if that what that brings to the table. You can go get a kind of works on the 40-minute model, so you can go demo it and then reboot and get rid of the nag messages and do that whole thing. So we'll see kind of what comes there. We did open up here for questions because we want to see what things. There's a lot of things covered that we haven't even gotten to because there's so much to talk about. Brad, what were some other things?
You may mention at the top of the show. What was the mood? What was the energy? What was the vibe? Did you sense anything different than last year?
Not really. I mean, my perspective is jaded because of the way that I approach the event. I walk in and just, I have a list of vendors that I want to talk to, and I go talk to these folks and grab interviews. And so, and I try to talk to a few people and just see what they're excited about. A lot of them were excited about this Optilec reader. And again, it was a cool looking device, but again, the $2,500 is, I'm just not there for something that can only save text, to my knowledge, right now. But, I mean, the idea of picking up something that's like a boombox, I just conceptually like the design of it and the way it was laid out, and it got a lot of people's attention. And, but I don't know because I don't – I think everyone attends and gets different vibes from this, and I tend to – geek out and talk to all the techie type folks. And
sure.
And like you mentioned, the big thing or that Larry mentioned, at the end of the day, these agencies and the people buying the technology, they have specific tasks in mind. Does it do these tasks? And they could add 50 other features, but doesn't matter. We need software to do this. We need hardware to do this. And, that's at the end of the day what people are going to spend their money on. So it'll be very curious to see what, people... I just think in the next couple of years, we're going to see some of these folks not being able to survive only because of the cutbacks in the budgets, the pricing models, the level of competition, as we said when we were talking about OCR. So I don't know.
And the general trend toward miniaturization and toward everybody, the whole world, at least in this, the developed world, is heading towards cell phones. And I would assume that all that's going to happen down the road is that the ability to read print with an iPhone will get better as the years go by because it's useful to other people. If it's useful to everybody, to the mainstream, then if it happens to benefit us, we come out ahead. I just don't see a device like what you're describing, however neat it is, making much of an impact.
Well, again, it's a price point. I mean, if this thing were $250 instead of $2,500 to be able to pick up a 4-pound device with a handle on it. I mean, this thing really just looked like a boombox with the speakers, and right in the middle is a little camera. You kind of pull it out and lay your paper underneath or even an iPhone down there, and it could read the screen. My thing, the big thing, and I'm not seeing anyone do this, this is something I even had this discussion with Dick Chandler when he created FS. The need... To me, there's definitely enough options to read the printed page. We need something to truly get the LCD and LED displays and really handheld. I've said it 12 years ago, and I'll say it today. There's a market, if you're listening, and the cameras can do it because we're seeing some preliminary results. A simple handheld-based pocket-size LCD LED reading device. Does anyone agree, disagree?
I agree that that's part of an equation, Mike, and I can certainly tell you that from the outset when we worked with the KNFB reader, that was certainly something that we envisioned with that product, and you can use it, for example, in certain instances to read microwave oven displays and ATMs. The issue, though, that was very quickly revealed to us, and we pondered it, and of course it was a no-brainer, and that is reading it is only half the equation. Interacting with it and responding to it, not just reading it, but actually knowing where the text is or where the option to touch for yes or for no is in relation to what you're hearing. And I think that to make something go that we could hold out or have a pair of glasses mounted devices or something and walk up to any old LCD display and not worry about whether or not it has speech and use it, I think that's the other half of the equation we need.
Right. So some way where it actually, say in the case of a microwave, so as you're actually moving over the physical controls that you would actually touch to invoke something like 0 through 9 or what have you, right, that there's some other audio indication that this is something that you interact with. So you are correct. That would be the necessary component to really, you know, take this to that next level. We have a text question here. Yeah, Peter Bosley says, like, exactly, you know, an airline, and a great example. I went up there the other day, had to have help, you know, getting your printout there to your boarding passes and so forth. That really doesn't mean anything if you can't, you know, interact and make it happen. That's true, but still, Pete, I mean, always, there's enough LCD and LED displays, just things like a radio or a television or your cable box, you know, just knowing what channel numbers you're on. And I mean, I don't know. I just see a need for that because, again, it's a tool that you can just get the readouts of, you know, mainstream devices, that it gives us some flexibility with just reading those digital displays.
The thermostat in my hotel room is one of the most devilish things I can imagine, and I travel a fair amount, and I travel to Washington, D.C. in the winter, and if someone can recommend a hotel with adequate heating in Washington, D.C., it's bhodges@afb.net, and so I never know where the thermostat is. The room cold because it got set down, or is the room cold because it's just a heat pump and you can't get any more warmth out of it?
Well, you guys keep coming around to a theme through this show, which is, has this become something that a blindness company can achieve, or is this a mainstream technology thing that is just good enough? And that's actually going on in Apple iOS talk anyway. Do you buy a single app versus a suite of apps? And how much are you willing to go if all you want it to do is one thing? So we've talked about mainstream applications in some of the audio interviews that we have coming up. Michael interviews a company that will create Apple iOS applications for you called Grimbla. And also, we talk about a little bit, you know, like Zoom Reader coming to the iPhone. Here's a mainstream device that's been partnered with an AT company. So what do you guys think is you know, going to be the thing? Is it good enough, or is it going to be a reinvention, or is it going to be off the stream technology?
Yes.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, where do you go with that? We all want to see that.
I for one, believe that good enough isn't. In other words, there's a lot of technology out there that you can pick up pretty inexpensively. You know, a $10 watch, a $20 iPhone app. That might be good enough. It's good enough now and then. It's good enough if I've got a sighted person around a lot of the time. So when it doesn't work real well, I can just shove it back in my pocket and ask the sighted person. To get to that point of excellence, to the point of 100% that we need as blind people, because we don't have the visual margin. You know, if this stuff doesn't work for a sighted guy, they're still pretty amazed that it worked as well as it did, and they turn it off and they go look at something else to get the information. We don't have that option. We don't have that margin. And so to get the rest of the way from the good enough represented by the $20 app to the point of complete access all the time represented by a $500 app, I think that's the trick. And it's puzzling, and I, for one, at least, I guess, don't want to abandon that expectation of complete access and excellence and it working all the time.
And I think I sort of agree with you on that. I tend to think, at least where I am right now in my life and watching, looking around, as blind people, we have some special needs, and the mainstream isn't going to meet them altogether, I don't think. And I guess I know some of you guys have watched the trends a lot more than I have, but I see Windows Phone 7 and Android and Google Apps and all these wonderful Google things that sighted people can do and have been able to do for some time with Google Docs and all those things. I see those as prime examples of how I don't think the mainstream is going to meet them. I think maybe there might be occasions where they will, but I think we're going to need the specialized help. And the iPhone, the thing that makes it wonderful is you have the hardware pretty well covered, and then if you can, then you have a pretty good platform to work with to develop the apps that we can use. And if that happens, and it has happened some, and if it continues to happen, that and other similar examples could be real positive.
Well, and it's all about communications of what you're offering. A great example was the HIMSS website, which was updated on Wednesday. I just brought it up on the screen. I hadn't looked at it until now, so I'm just kind of looking at it here as we speak. So, you know, there's a company gambling coming in to a market where, you know, it's there's a lot of uncertainty only because of the funding mechanisms and how that's changing and the cutbacks, you know, on state levels.
But Mike, we've got to get beyond that, though.
Well, I know that. That's what I mean. But they have to come into consumer price levels. That's why we have to get beyond that.
Well, it depends. It depends what you talk about consumer price levels. If you're a consumer of an automobile, you know, an automobile is a $15,000 to $25,000 to $40,000 proposition. It's not ever going to be $295 by virtue of the beast. And in terms of having it purchased for us, it's like saying, well, I expect neurosurgery for $995. It's not. You know, neurosurgery is a $50,000, $100,000 proposition, and that's the way of the world. And so, yes, the times have changed, and yes, there is this shift in the public domain, but at the same time, it is reasonable for us to maintain the standards of functionality and effectiveness that we need to in order to be productive, employed and employable.
Now, you did an article on accessible, the current state of appliances. I want to mention that. You know, I don't know if you have anything you want to comment. Of course, we can link
to that.
There's
a bunch of good news out there. I'm very excited, actually. I was, you know, the excitement, the pessimism and the optimism wax and wane. There's a bunch of interesting stuff, and I'm just putting together another little article. Amana has introduced an electric range, and I presume the gas model, with oven controls that have tactile characteristics, and I expect that's because of their ownership by Whirlpool. GE has a microwave oven that I saw at Lowe's in both black and white, or in either black or white, I should say, with very distinctive bubble-like controls on it. GE has a wall oven with the same kind of bubble-like controls on it. The Whirlpool stoves have maintained and enhanced their tactile characteristics for oven controls, as have the Whirlpool dishwashers and the Whirlpool Duet front-loading washers. Frigidaire washers now have a very distinctive groove in the main control that you can feel. And that list is growing. If not completely accessible, certainly they're much more usable than they were even 12 or 18 months ago. So I'm very excited.
Well, it's, folks, you're certainly welcome to submit questions if you like. I think, Joe, you wanted to say something earlier, and maybe we covered it, or...
Well, I wonder if some of the news for ATIA is the lack of news coming out of ATIA.
I think it is, because we're really, you know, there's only so much to talk about. And
it reminds me of the sports talk radio format now that, you know, they have to fill, and that's not the only one, but they have to fill, you know, 24/7 exciting news about sports. Well, there just isn't. And I think that's what we're kind of running up against here a little bit. I mean, there's only so many players and there's only so many new things they're going to do, and it takes time to do them.
Or is it that they're waiting, holding their marketing budgets for CSUN? Certainly CSUN got a call for papers that was bigger than they thought, and they actually had to take some extra time to review them because there was so many more submissions for CSUN. So is it that maybe the industry is changing the way that it's presenting its information, and they're waiting for San Diego and perhaps maybe NFBACB in the summer?
And again, the economy, that you can't attend all of these events, and you have to pick and choose, and some only do ATIA, and some only do CSUN, and some only do the blindness convention. So it's knowing your market and knowing where it's prudent to spend your dollars and set up tables and so forth.
But as a guy who looks at a lot of this stuff, good grief, I'm feeling ancient. I've been in this field for 21 years. I was a toddler when I started. And I remember a time when you would go to a conference, you know, every 6 months, every year. And so everything that was new in that entire year was sort of unveiled at one time. Now, you know within 5 minutes. And so if you stack up all the announcements and all the emails and all of the different release notes, you've got over a year and only looked at them once a year. I don't know that there would be that much less stuff.
But the whole internet, that's a good point. So 21 years, you've seen the change of the internet, whereas when you started, you had to go. You had to travel to these events.
I invented the internet, Mike.
Oh, I should have known.
You and Al Gore.
Yeah, you and Al Gore. That's right. So, you know.
You're absolutely right. That's absolutely right, yeah.
So now you have the benefit of, I mean, you have walkthroughs. It's good that you can go there and get your hands on the device. So when you started, that was the only way you could see or get any vibe of these products available. Now, of course, with the internet, I mean, you can have webinars, you can have videos and so forth. So you could say, well, there's a disadvantage that you can't walk and actually put your hands and feel it. But by the same token, there's only so much you can get out of an expo because you really can't sit there and test it and take it into a lab and see, you know, to learn the device and then to really put it through its paces.
I think shows like that,
we lose you?
Work for BrailleBox, the case and video magnifiers. It's better to see them and touch them and feel them and know them. But for something like a BrailleBox, I think that was a wonderful show for them. And it was a great innovative time for Bookshare to release the apps, the Read2Go, the Mac app. Some people are just really good at presentations and stacking it, like you were saying, Brad. But, you know, this doesn't just affect blindness. This affects CES. This affects E3, the video game industry. Sometimes this happens and there are lulls in the technology, and perhaps we're just playing catch up to mainstream on this one.
I was at an FCC meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the people around the table represented Sony and Google and Panasonic and Microsoft and on and on and on. It was sort of your hit parade of the manufacturers. And I something got said about CES, and there was this sort of collective industry moan of, well, I suppose we have to, around the table. And at CES, the big dilemma is, do they even bother to make an announcement? Because the competition within the show is so great for the press attention that's there. These companies spend, you know, a minimum of $100,000 all the way up to several million dollars just to be there and exhibit, and they can't control whether or not they get noticed by virtue of the crowding, and so many of them have stopped making significant announcements at CES, and they'll do it in their own venue at their own time.
I like the question that just came up in tech chat.
Yeah, Mike Arrigo asked if the introduction of the Mac with a free screen reader makes the $800 price model, you know, impossible to swallow, or what? How does it change the playing field if Microsoft introduces a screen reader? And to that I say, they already have their thing they called Narrator, and Ellie said it's not a screen reader, but there were folks in the industry that said, well, Microsoft has one built in called Narrator, so if they raise the bar, either buy some existing technology or maybe they go fund NVDA and throw it in as a screen reader. And then what happens to say, okay, now we have a screen reader. Okay. And the employer says, well, we don't need to spend money on that. Or the state says, okay, Microsoft has a screen reader and assumes everything is hunky-dory. Do you think that matters? I mean, well, and we won't know until that comes up, because that goes back to where Brad says, maybe I'm making too much of it, this whole concept of the state and federal funding, because you always hear the companies say, well, that was R&D. The price comes in because we have to recoup our costs for R&D. So if they don't get that money and they claim they can't do the R&D, then we have a reduction in product. So either somehow everything mainstream. So it sounds like there's a whole transition period that could be coming into play, and we don't know how that's going to play out.
I think the question of whether the Mac really meets the needs depends on what the end user needs to do. And obviously the Mac works really well in some circumstances, but
employment, you're in Windows, exactly. You asking, yeah, Brad what his question was?
If you've got carbon in the picture in a Mac app, you're out of luck. And, you know, that's that. And Mac will tell you that. If you've got an inaccessible or tough or difficult app in the Windows domain, generally speaking, one or another or several of the companies, the screen reader companies, will try to do something. You know, think of Lotus Notes, for example. I know of at least one screen reader company that has put a lot of effort and work into Lotus Notes because it was important for some relatively very few, but some very loyal and important customers of that company. There's no such analogous function or development in the voiceover domain. It's thumbs up or thumbs down, and that is one of the difficulties of the included or OS delivered screen access functionality.
I mean, it's good now. Brad, that could change. Brad, and as Apple, you know, goes to do. Okay, Pete Bosley has a comment, which they won't be able to hear. So go ahead, make your comment, Pete, and I'll relay it back to them.
I guess I was just going to say that, you know, we should be holding the people that are developing these applications on the Mac accountable, just like we hold a mainstream manufacturer of a product, like, you know, the electric stoves we were talking about. Make your application work with the standards that Apple's put in place for accessibility instead of having to...
Oh, we lost.
Retrofit, you know, accessibility later.
Okay, right. Let me relay that. Pete Bosley's saying that we need to make the developers of the apps for the Mac accountable. But, of course, then you can say, well, that also goes over to the software makers of Windows. And it's an age-old problem of at what point is it that the apps are inaccessible, and at what point is it that the, you know, screen reader manufacturers have become lazy, whether it's ARIA or whatever, to do things on their end to make the software more usable. So chicken and egg thing going on. I mean, obviously there's blatant inaccessibility.
Well, your interview with the gentleman from BOM on the Open Braille Initiative is a really good one. I highly suggest when this is loaded to the Serotalk.com website, you give a sound to that, because he talks about that, about the Braille server and being able to put things in print that not only the Braille could be gotten to, but also screen readers as a whole. And that interview that's upcoming that Michael has done on Open Braille Initiative, which is openbraille.org, addresses some of what Pete is talking about. Now, you know, there's also hope that that will not just address things for Windows, but that will address it for Linux, for Mac, for everything, because that was the concept.
Very good points here. Very good points. We're about out of time, and I want to go around and do some final comments from each of you. I guess I'll start with you, Brad. You have an opinion or two,
well,
don't you, usually?
Well, I don't have any opinions. You know me. I'm just sitting here in Huntington. No, I always appreciate coming on with you guys. It is lots of fun. Dean, this is the first time you and I have had a chance to share the Skype connection here. It's great. And top tech tidbits. Well, if Thursday goes by and I don't get it, I'm a little bit unhappy for the day. I really value top tech tidbits, and I know so many people do, so a public shout out to you and gratitude for that, and also a public shout out to Enabling Technology, that Tony Shank observed is 40 years old, a great company and a really interesting guy. If you haven't interviewed him, Mike Loff, Tony's a guy who can design the product and come and fix it. I have a lot of admiration for that.
Wow. Definitely.
He can pull a screwdriver out of his pocket and fix his embossing.
He's a MacGyver.
I've seen him do it.
A.T. MacGyver. There you go. Dean, what would you like to leave us with today, sir?
Well, indeed, Top Tech Tidbits is the newsletter I always wanted to get. Since nobody else was doing it, I decided I would 293 issues ago. And I'm glad it's helpful. It helps me, and I'm pleased to be able to do it. And I'm pleased to be able to come on here and talk about all this stuff. And I share your I recently had occasion to contact Enabling for some tech support of the site, and I was impressed by the quality of it. So I have to say I share your impression of that company.
Joe, what would you like to throw at us here?
Sure. Real quick, I think it's really neat that AI Squared is reinvented themselves. I think that's really fascinating. I was really excited to hear the things about the Open Braille Initiative. I like what we're hearing out of WindowEyes with 7.5. I'm interested to see the Optelec product. I think Michael was lucky to be able to see this. I like that it runs on battery power, which is unique, 5 hours on a battery for the Clear Reader. I also want to remind everybody that we'll be in SAMnet. So if you want to come on and continue the conversation, come on over to www.satogo.com and join us in the Tech Voice chat room. We'll continue this conversation on. I also want to thank Larry Lewis for joining us earlier. We appreciate him and his time coming on board. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Yes. So I would only conclude with saying, you hit it there, Joe. The key word is, if a company's going to survive, they're going to have to reinvent themselves. A lot of things going on today are not going to be around a few years from now. Your operating budgets for research and development are going to reduce. AI squared and working with the mainstream product, a great example. Some of the stuff going with Serotek, always looking, because we're getting away from the known PCs and going to portable devices. So again, all of you, we appreciate all the work that you do. Dean, your newsletters are an invaluable resource to me. Or do I mean valuable? It's both. I don't know. How do you say? Brad, your work and the stuff that AFB does and all the reviews of the appliances. And I think your monthly, by going monthly, and also just the quality of journalism and coverage, I think, and has greatly improved. So we're very excited, and we're all about promoting other podcasts and other resources, because it's going to take all of us to just bring everyone up to speed of, because the technology is changing so quickly. And Bill McCann made a great point that this is a great time for blind people. There's a lot of new options, a lot of new opportunities, and I'm very excited as a journalist to be covering it and trying to stay on top of all of the new developments such as they are. So we hope you'll go to serotalk.com. We'll have the 25 interviews posted. We'll be doing CSUN coverage, and of course, as always, speaking with great folks like those joining us today to stay up on the latest and greatest innovation. So join us Feb 3, this Thursday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, and we will cover this month in access technology and talk about maybe anything that we didn't cover today, but also just the industry itself. And again, as Joe said, meet us in the tech chat room, and we will continue the discussion further. So until we meet again, let's stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.